Council and Committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, and welcome back, Madam Clerk.
Thank you.
Please do the roll call.
Your Worship, all members of Council are present.
Thank you. There are no addendas to this meeting, to this agenda. I'm just going to have two announcements. The first is that the Taste of Fort Erie is scheduled for Saturday, September the 26th. Saturday, right? And that's from 10 a.m. until 11:30 p.m. I understand that there's going to be all kinds of food. It's a food festival. There's going to be a kids zone. There's going to be concerts, lots of activities throughout the day. And so I would encourage everyone to get down to Jarvis Street because I think it's going to be a great day. And then the second thing I want to do is pass on the appreciation of the Fort Erie Fire Department for the Community Safety Day, what used to be called Sparky's Birthday, which was held on Saturday. Had a very good turnout. There were lots of kids here and lots of emergency vehicles from the police, the fire department, EMS. And so the fire department wanted me to thank the following for bringing out equipment and personnel. The Niagara Regional Police, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, Niagara EMS, Canadian Motor Speedway, Zabcorps Trucking, Canadian Niagara Power, Fort Erie La France Museum, East Birdie Fire Association, the Niagara Region, CAA Niagara, CN Rail, the Ontario Provincial Police, St. John Ambulance, Two-Day FM Radio, Red Knights Motorcycle Club, Enbridge Gas, Port Colborne Fire and Emergency Services, Crystal Beach Firefighters Association, the Navy League Cadets, and Kerry Fiddler with his race car and the Niagara Regional Hazmat Trailer. So thank you to all of those individuals who made that day a great success. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest, Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Your Worship. I have an interest in IS-31-2015-7.2 as my company and that company does business together.
So that's in the consent agenda, so we'll remove that from the from that package when we get there. I'm sorry, you said IS-17. Okay, so that's. Oh, okay, that's Alf, the contract with Alf Beam. Right. Anyone else? I've also indicated that I have a pecuniary interest in one of the properties on Appendix 1 to report 16 for 2015, which is in the consent agenda. That is the rebates and adjustments report. And so I'm going to ask for that when we get there, for that to be removed from the consent agenda package and be dealt with separately. At that point, I'll ask Councillor Passero to assume the chair for that one report. Are there any other disclosures? There being none, then I give public notice of a public meeting that is to take place with respect to the Stevensville Core Area Community Improvement Plan, or CIP, on October the 5th, 2015 at 6 p.m. here in the Town Hall Council Chambers. That takes us to the consent agenda items. And could I have a motion to remove Councillor Nutt, that is to remove report CS-16-2015 from that package. All those in favor? That is carried. Are there any other items that anyone wishes to remove from that consent agenda? Then, Council, could I have a motion then to approve the consent agenda items, and then we'll get to the debate. Councillor McDermott, are there any questions or comments with respect to any of the items that remain in the consent agenda package? Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just the report on the salaries. CAO 17
yes.
-2015 on page 2 going through the agenda or the report just for the people that are listening there are some things where we're talking about the 70th percentile and that we want to readjust our rates, our pay rates with staff. So that's we're staying within that. But on page two, I see under background, I would say one, two, three, fourth or fifth paragraph. In other words, the town will offer job rates at so and so. And then it goes on to say that in the years since the market has become even more competitive with an aging demographic, early retirements, and skill shortages. Now, I think we're experiencing some skill shortages. But my question is, how are we going to make our adjustments if we're experiencing skill shortages? Are we going to adjust our pay rates accordingly? So,
Mr. Cookett or Mr. Jansen, which one of you? It's here, Mr. Mather. I was looking for you up here, and there you were down in the audience. I'll even turn on your mic.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to the counselor, are we going to adjust the pay rates? I think the intent in, say, 2017 would be to look at a revised salary administration schedule. The recommendation from the region is to not make changes now because we only have 1 year's worth of data to look at. But we do know that there are positions that are currently below market that it would make sense to address from an attraction and retention perspective. So I don't foresee any immediate salary changes. And where there are salary changes, it would be to the band and not necessarily the incumbents.
Dr. Lewis?
Yes, so does this have any relation to the 70th percentile that we're talking about in the report? I guess that's my second question, because what I'm seeing here is we're trying to make some adjustments, and there's going to be some, if we make these adjustments, but if we're saying that we have a skills shortage, then I'm just saying that in my view, everything needs to coincide.
Mr. Mather?
I think the reference to skill shortage is intended to indicate to Mayor and Council that because some skills are in high demand, those individuals with those skills are demanding higher wages. And that will skew your salary line, or it will put greater emphasis on the employer to change its salaries to meet that demand in order to address skill shortages. So it could be, in our case, we've run into challenges on the pay side with technical positions, sort of planning and engineering positions. There is a skill shortage in those areas, and consequently, incumbents in those positions are marketable. So if we want to retain those incumbents in positions that are demonstrating market sensitivity, we have to look at what we are paying them. And in order to attract people to us as an employer, we have to look at what we are offering.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much. And then on page three, under analysis, the second paragraph, appropriate comparators were found for 43 of the 51 jobs in our management supervisory non-union salary grid, which is attached to the report. A few, like those in community gaming, are somewhat unique in Fort Erie and difficult to match. Can you just give us an explanation? I'm looking at community gaming and looking at the staff there. In my view, it's administrative. So I guess where I need to get a hold of is, where's the difficulty in finding comparators?
Certainly, through you, Your Worship, to the counselor. The comparators were drawn from a very comprehensive study that's done annually by the company called Mercer Canada, which focuses specifically on municipal compensation. Fort Erie is unique in the sense that we have a gaming section within our organizational structure. Not many municipalities have a distinct gaming segment or gaming section within their organization. So when you're looking for gaming comparators in other municipalities, they don't exist because those functions don't exist. So that is why the region in their recommendations is saying, let's take another look at those jobs, see if we can tease out some of those duties more particularly, and then go back to the market and see if there is a match, picking up on your point, Counselor, that there might be similar functions within that job specification that match functions within different job classifications that are perhaps outside of the scope of a gaming function.
Well, I guess what the report is saying is that's where we're going to go, or is that where you feel we're going to go? We're going to start looking and track and boil it down to, well, this is pretty much close to what they're doing, even though it's not exactly the same as it's administrative in nature.
For your worship, that's correct. So what the report is recommending is that we look at those positions that did not have matches or were out of market and be a little bit more particular in those job duties so that the region can then go back to the data and try and find a better a match or a better match.
Okay, thank you. And then moving on to page 5, under financial and staffing implications, this is where I was getting at with the wages and the changes in wages. And the second paragraph, when I'm looking at the second paragraph, and I'm seeing that it talks about a salary band with a range of $69,000 to $84,000, and the incumbent salary is at $80,000. And what the report is saying is that doesn't necessarily that mean that the if we change the band from, say, from 76 to 92, that person would get a raise, that their wages would change. The wages would probably just stay the same, but that's what it's saying in the report. But my question is, if someone's at 80,000 when the band is between 69 and 84, that puts them at the higher part of the band. So now if we change it from 76,000 to 92,000, 80,000 would put you at the lower part of the band. And my concern is, will that employee come back and say, well, I still want to be at the same position in the band, which would, if we look at that, the numbers come out, there would be, I think there's an $8,000 difference. So will that create a problem with us as far as changing the band and then having employees come back and say, well, I think I should be in the same position in the new band as I was in the older band?
For your worship, I think that's fair comment. That's human nature. The Me Too mentality, if you will. Salaries are, individual incumbent salaries are looked at annually as part of the performance management process. If there is a belief that a particular individual warrants more pay and is qualified for that more pay and is perhaps in a market-sensitive position where we would have to adjust the salary to retain that individual, then yes, that kind of pressure will be brought to bear.
So if that comes forward, will it still be based on you're at 80,000, we're going to base it on your job performance and your job skills, so it's just going to be a percentage, not so much putting you in the same position as the grid, in the grid or the band being above
that,
below
that,
the road?
That, through your worship, that would be the intent, and that's exactly what happened when we did the last salary review in 2007. So folks whose salaries were in the band were, their salaries were pegged in that band. They didn't, it wasn't, it wasn't adjusted proportionally to where they were in the band.
Councilor Lubbers?
Okay. And then just a general question, just for some clarification, on page 6, talks about the pay equity. And I'm just, is the town of Fort Erie right now maintaining the pay equity 100%, or are we right there with what we're expected?
Our certainly, through your worship, our current salary administration plan is pay equity compliant. We are obliged to maintain pay equity. The last time we adjusted salaries in 2007, we posted an amended pay equity plan. I suspect that the same thing would happen once we get through this process, say in 2017, 2018.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilor Lubberts. Anyone else? Mr. Mather's at the podium. Mr. Mather, just a couple of questions. Under analysis in the report, the second bullet says market data was aged by 1.5% to create 2015 comparator rates. What does that mean?
Certainly, Your Worship. So the salaries in 2014 were what they were. Salaries in 2015 generally were adjusted for inflation. So to compare apples to apples, if you will, we looked at the region looked at the 2014 rates in the comparators, adjusted the comparator rates by 1.5%, and then compared them to our 2015 rates.
And with respect to the bands that you were referring to, and there are 13 separate bands, I believe, are there employees that have been identified to date that have fallen, their pay ranges have fallen below the comparators?
Yes.
And are there any where we've got employees that are actually being paid more than the comparator at a similar
band? At the 70th percentile, I believe there's only one.
So it's fair to say that there will be some financial implications, if not in 2016, likely in 2017.
I think that's a fair assumption, Your Worship.
Thank you. Anyone else on this? Thank you very much, Mr. Mather. Are there any other questions of any other reports in the consent agenda package? Mr. Jansen, I had some questions with respect to report CS-15. Which is the second quarter financial report. And on page 2, there's a reference to water flows, but the sewer flows would also have been affected, were they not, this year?
To your worship, yes. They would also have experienced some of the same trends.
And when we get back to the appendixes, I think, not sure if it's the last one, second last one. Well, let me go to the end. The end has the status of various projects, some of which have been partially completed, some of which haven't been started, and their various explanations for those. This just covers the outstanding ones for 2015. Back further than that. This is the very last couple of pages. That would be Appendix 2.
Your Worship, yes, this is the status of all capital projects as at June 30th for the year, and I believe it does exclude some that may not be in progress.
Okay, and is that information that you provide to us on a periodic basis?
This particular capital variance is provided with the second quarter in May. We provide a capital variance, a separate capital variance report as well as October. So come October, you'll see another separate capital variance report that shows all those items and the closing out of those if they are complete.
Okay. And then I noticed that when we were dealing with some of the departments, are we required to allocate to each? So we have a number of pages in Appendix 1 that deals with various aspects, Marin Council, what have you. Are you required by provincial regulation to break out salaries for each one of these various departments or call them?
To your worship, these aren't so much provincially required as much as they are the way we've structured ourselves internally. So while there is some reporting that does mostly align with these for the province in particular with the financial information return, these are more so presented for council in the way that we've structured ourselves, particularly in a HR sense, but also operationally. This is how we've chosen over the last years to present each functional area.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions, Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. I guess on page 2 of the report, under water and wastewater, it talks about a variance from the budget of $200,000. And is this a variance in the budget in a negative sense or a positive?
Mr. Jansen.
To Councilor Lubberts, you're correct. We actually did neglect to put that it is negative. It was in the context of the flows being lower, but you're right. It is a negative variance projected for the year.
Councilor Lubberts?
So is this going to have a big effect when it comes budget time if this continues? I mean, we're looking at $200,000, and from what I understand, water and wastewater is neutral revenue. So if we're experiencing a negative of $200,000, is the ratepayer going to be looking at a increase when it comes budget time?
Jansen?
To Councilor Lubberts, yes, the best help in understanding the impact of this is likely in the other report coming tonight regarding budget planning. In that, there is discussion regarding the impacts currently and projected impacts of the water and wastewater rate setting. It does note in that report the projected deficit for the current year, and traditionally the way the town has managed that is by funding in-year operating deficits through rate stabilization reserves. However, there is a risk with those reserves as we've had multiple years of deficits, as well as the increasing charges in the treatment side with the wastewater that we've experienced.
For Lubberts?
All right, thank you very much. Page 3, the last paragraph, there's things on penalties and interest, and then we're looking at the results from June 30th, is on target to yield a $100,000 surplus. That surplus would just be on the penalties and interest. It wouldn't be on the overall budget. Is that correct?
To Councilor Lubberts, that's correct. It's just limited in that case to that one area.
And on page 4, the winter costs. And again, we're looking at a shortfall of approximately $450,000. And it goes on in the middle of the first paragraph there, although a significant budget shortfall is noted for the winter operating budget, it should be noted that overages in water operating costs have historically been mitigated by surpluses in wastewater through a reallocation of resources and deferred maintenance. So are we anticipating that we're going to make up for the shortfall through the reallocation of resources and deference of maintenance?
Mr. Jansen?
To the counselor, yes, the $450,000 at that time back in June when that report came forward was limited to the water side, and that would have been from the first quarter of the year, so we certainly would have had more information to bring us to the end of June. As well, the $200,000 negative variance projected to the end of the year as at the end of June is net for both the water and wastewater operations. So did that answer your question?
Maybe I could, Mr. Walsh, do you have any comment with respect to that?
Yes, through you, Mr. Mayor. There are programs in the water and wastewater division that we would like to undertake, but we recognize the realities of the budget here. So we'll keep a close eye on the numbers, and if we don't think we're going to meet the numbers that we would like to see, we won't do them this year. So those monies would be credited to the bottom line.
Hunter Luberts.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that's it on that report. Thank you.
Any other questions with respect to the consent agenda item or package as it exists? If not, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. Councillor Passero, could I then give you the chair to deal with report CS 16-2015 in view of my conflict on 287?
Thank you, Mayor Redicombe. I've been working midnight, so in addition to just waking up and having Justin Bieber hair and, as Councillor Zanko gleefully pointed out, creases on the side of my face still, I don't have my iPad, so if I could ask one of my colleagues to give me the dollar amount for 287 Central Avenue.
I think if we, Councillor Passero, I think if we just move that 287 Central Avenue be dealt with separately from the rest of the report, that would be adequate. We could give you the...
I'm just looking as far as the recommendation goes, because
sure.
The recommendation speaks specifically to the dollar amounts.
I see, yes.
So if I could have a member of council give me the dollar amount for 287 Central, or the clerk. Oops, that's the total amount? Are they not broken out separately by property? $2,860. So we'll juggle the recommendation around a little bit, and we'll go that the list of taxes and penalties as attached to Appendix 1, save and accept 287 Central Avenue, which total $28,031.85. The 16 cents?
49.
Okay. And 16 cents. Be canceled, reduced, or refunded as applicable in accordance with Section 357 and 358 of the Municipal Act 2001, and council direct staff to prepare the appropriate bylaw. If I could have someone put that motion forward. Councillor Zanko, questions or comments regarding that motion? Seeing none, all in favor? So we'll deal with 287 Central Avenue separately. If somebody could put forward the motion that the list of taxes and penalties specifically concerning 287 Central Avenue, which totaled $2,860.49, as included in Appendix 1, be canceled, reduced, or refunded as applicable in accordance with Section 357 and 358 of the Municipal Act 2001, and Council direct staff to prepare the appropriate bylaw. Councillor McDermott, thank you. Moved by Councillor McDermott. Comments or questions specifically to 287 Central Avenue? Seeing none, all those in favor? Thank you. I'll turn the chair back to Mayor Redcombe. and the iPad back to Councilor Zanko.
Thank you, Councilor Passero. That takes us to Infrastructure Services, Councilor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Infrastructure Services is now in session. We have no presentations or delegations, and the first report that is up is IS-31-2015, award of tender for Buffalo Road and Orchard Avenue water main replacement.
So moved.
Moved by Mayor Redekop. Any comments or questions on the report? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. That moves us to report IS-33-2015, Highway Occupancy Permit Policy Bylaw. Local mover for that?
So moved.
Moved by Mayor Redekop. Any comments or questions? Mayor Redekop, go ahead.
I had a few questions with respect to this. I'm wondering what the basis was for the fees that have been established or are being proposed.
You, Mr. Chairman, the base fee of $100 covers staff time to review the application for the occupation. The damage deposits are estimates of what we think it would take to cover minor repairs based on the description of the works there. I would like to note that they are only deposits, and if the actual cost to make good is more to the town than the deposit or not repaired by the applicant, that full costs will be assessed beyond the deposit to the applicant.
Okay, thank you. And just in the body of the draft bylaw, I note that this really pertains to a situation where it appears that someone is doing some work on private property. So I'm thinking in terms of let's use Bell Canada because that's a current topic. Someone's doing work on Bell Canada infrastructure within the road allowance. This would apply, Mr. Chair?
Through you, Mr. Chair. In that particular case, work by utilities is covered under a different agreement called our municipal consent. This covers more private property owners doing work on buildings or I'll give the example, the MTO doing work on the Ridge Road overpass. Through their work, they have to occupy part of Ridge Road, the town's right of way. So they would need to apply for that. There's many different applications we have. Some are covered under the building department. Some are covered under planning. But this kind of covers a hole in our coverage.
If I might, Mr. Chair, what about a situation where an individual is just doing some work around his property? This does cover landscape features such as trees. What if it's a private individual who happens to cut down a municipal tree on the road allowance? This didn't appear to cover that.
Well,
through you, Mr. Chair, that's covered through our bylaws in that case.
Okay. My understanding is that there's nothing there's no direct route. Well, I'll deal with bylaw enforcement. In the draft bylaw, section 4.1, which is on 9 of the report, page 3 of the draft bylaw, there appears to be a word missing. This is the delegation of authority to the director to administer, and either there's a word missing or there's an and that should be removed. Attention of the clerk.
Where is this?
That's paragraph 4.1, the first line, which is on page 9 of the report, page 3 of the draft bylaw. Then Schedule A. Just wondering what just give me a moment, Mr. Chair. So paragraph 4.5, I presume then is premised on a permit being granted.
Through you, Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And I guess if a permit isn't granted, Mr. Chair, then I suppose that's a violation of this particular bylaw itself.
Again, that's correct, yes.
I think those are my questions. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? I just have a few. I guess I'll direct them to Mr. Walsh as well. On page 2 of the report, when I was reading through the report, most of this report, when I'm looking at it, it seems to me that it would more reflect work being done, or work being done by contractors on private property, or private property owners doing their own work. But in on page 2, under analysis, it says the occupancy policy is the means in which municipality manages its public rights of ways. Then it goes on to say that it applies to all parties excavating, constructing, doing work, temporarily occupying, conducting various activities and events. So the activities and the events, does that cover like the nonprofit organizations as well? And like Ridgefest or...
They are covered under an application through our Community and Development Services Division.
So, and then in this here, what would be considered the events, activities, and various activities and events? What?
Well, right now it's sort of a catch-all phrase. I can't give a specific example right now. My apologies, but that's the verbiage we've all come up with.
So, if not now, we'll get an explanation later. But what I'm saying is we need to know that if this is going to affect people that are having events on the road, and specifically what I'm asking is, for instance, South Coast restaurant in Crystal Beach, they'll have events on the sidewalk and on the road Friday the 13th, or he'll have some special event and he'll ask for a road closure so he can use the street and the sidewalk for extra people to be at his establishment. Will this apply to him?
In that case, no, it wouldn't. That's through our community events program. This policy is to, as I said, to close a hole that we have right now. I'll give an example of there are many businesses in Ridgeway and on Jarvis Street that have buildings immediately on the property line. In order to undertake repairs or restoration to those building faces, they have to occupy the sidewalk for a period of time. They may have to dig up the sidewalk to replace services, etc. We want to know what they're doing on the road allowance. We want to make assurances that the road allowance is safe for vehicles and pedestrians and the public in general. And we want to cover our assets in case that the applicant damages our property and does not make restoration evident.
Okay, so just one final question on all of that then. Is there a chance that we can explain that somewhere in a report, in this report or in the bylaw or something, so that we have a distinction, so that people don't get confused that they have to pay these fees for other events? And I'm going back to when it talks about, other activities and events on page two. Can we get some clarification so we don't find ourselves getting confused as to who has to apply for this permit and who doesn't?
Mr. Chair, why don't we ask staff to simply provide us with some breakdown as to what an event or activity might be, or whether that was simply excess verbiage that really didn't need to be contained in the report. I don't see any definition in the draft bylaw. It covers events or activities, and it may be that that was something that slipped in, but I think we can get clarification from that before next week. And then if there is some substance to it, staff can advise us, and if not, they can let us know that as well.
That's fine, Mr. Walsh.
Yes, if I may make a suggestion, I think you've identified some sort of confusion in the application of our various policies. And I think it's in staff and council's and the town's best interest if we develop a checklist. If you come in and you have a parade, this is what you fill out. And it's on one piece of paper. If you want to make renovations to your building, this is what you fill out. So we'll have it at CSU. We'll have it upstairs for clarification.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the questions. All those in favor? Opposed? Seeing none, that is carried. That's it for the reports. I guess we'll move on to new business and inquiries. Is there any new business or any inquiries?
An inquiry, and I'm sure it's somewhat related to infrastructure services. How are we making in terms of the responses on the Ramsar designation? We were waiting for something. We've received two emails now. Responses, but I don't know that we've received anything definitive yet from the Conservation Authority.
Mr. Walsh?
Mr. Brady?
Brady.
Through you to the Mayor, you're quite correct. We've received a response from Environment Canada. We've also received a response from a lawyer in Buffalo, and we've asked for a response from the Conservation Authority. In writing, the last email I've received from the Conservation Authority is they'd like to meet because they're not sure what we're actually asking for. So I've said that's fine. Both the town of Niagara and Lake and the town of Fort Erie have agreed to meet with the Conservation Authority to make it clear to them that what we need, we thought we had, but nonetheless. And we're awaiting for a date from the Conservation Authority for that meeting so that we can, the towns, if you will, can both meet with the Conservation Authority and make it clear that we want to understand from how they will be utilizing any designation of the Niagara River under Ramsar as part of their regulatory approval process. And that's what we're waiting for.
Thank you.
Any other inquiry, Councilor Pizarro?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a fantastic Senior Citizens Advisory Committee event last night at Stevensville Memorial Hall. And as I was leaving, I noticed that the fence on the northern boundary of the property is pretty overgrown with brush and plant life, and it makes it very difficult to see any oncoming traffic traveling south on Stevensville Road. And you also have to almost get across the sidewalk before you can see. So I'm hoping infrastructure could direct our operations crew to go out and clear some of that brush away from the fence. I remember making this request a couple of years back. I'm hoping we could just maybe work this into one of our regular practices to keep an eye on it. Seems to grow fairly quick, and it definitely obstructs your view as you're coming out of the library in Stevensville Memorial Hall parking lot area.
Mr. Walsh?
Noted. I wasn't in charge then.
Okay. All right.
Does that mean I'll have to wait twice as long now?
Well, maybe Mr. Cook could comment. All right. Any other inquiries? Seeing none, that moves us to the business status report. Any comments or questions on the business status report? Seeing none, infrastructure services is now in recess. I'll turn the chair back over to Mayor Redicott.
Thank you, Councillor Lubberts. That takes us to corporate services, Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Corporate services is now opened. Seeing that we don't have delegations this evening, that will bring us to report CAO 16-LC22-2015. Can I get a mover for that report? Councillor Butler? Are there any comments or questions with this report? Your Worship?
Yes, I had a question with respect to an item on page 6 of the report. It's in the minutes, it's on page 3, item 2, sub 7A, and that relates to the Stevensville gas station. There's a reference to the town waiting for the region to make a decision with respect to something by September 17th. Did we, in fact, get a response from the region?
Mr. Cookett?
I can answer that. We did not receive anything, so we are proceeding as planned with the tax sale.
Thank you.
Councilor Roberts?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just on the minutes themselves, I guess page 2 of the minutes, the sale of the land sale application request of Gordon Avenue. I see that Mr. Teal has requested to purchase 7 meters of a road allowance. I guess my question is, were the abutting property owners offered the same, from what I understand with the Municipal Act, if we're selling off a road allowance, that the abutting property owners have to be offered the same opportunity to purchase? I'm just wondering, are we complying with all the rules? And
Mr. Brady, could you answer that?
Thank you. I'll answer that question to Councillor Lubberts. All the rules have been conferred with. That road allowance is, we're maintaining a portion of the road allowance. The portion that we're maintaining has drainage and some infrastructure through it. So the portion that we're selling to Mr. Teal is on the one side of the road allowance, and it's obviously the side that is abutting his property. We had originally offered to him to sell him 3 meters, and he'd come back and ask for 7. We've gone out and taken a look, and the 7 meters does not interfere with the infrastructure that's in the remainder of it. So there is no further adjacent property owner to offer it to, because we are maintaining a piece of the road allowance because we need it for drainage and infrastructure.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Brady. Just to follow up on all of that, then, Mr. Teal's asking for 7 meters, and we all know that a lot of our road allowances are different widths in town. So how much of the road allowance would be left, and is it enough to be still be a road allowance, or maybe do we need to change it from a road allowance to just a town-owned property with drainage?
Through to Councillor Lubberts, the road allowance is a 20-meter wide road allowance. The town will continue to maintain 13 meters in its ownership, and 7 meters will be sold to Mr. Teal if Council decides on that. 13 meters will probably never be utilized as a road, maybe used as a pedestrian walkway at some point in time, but it will never be used as a road. But I don't foresee any reason why we would take it out of its status as a road allowance, because as a road allowance, it provides us a certain amount of protection in terms of of people encroaching upon it, and that's our highest level of protection for in terms of encroachments into the future.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Brady, and Madam Chair, if I may. I think that's where I was going with the whole thing is if we decide at that at this point with the size of it, that we probably would never utilize it as a road allowance, but it does give us some protection as far as encroachments. I was thinking the other way. Could we offer it to the other abutting property owners so that they would have more property, and then they would be would with a bigger frontage, we'd have it'd be on the tax roll. Is that a possibility?
Mr. Brady?
Through you to Councilor Lubert. No, we wouldn't be considering selling it to the abutting property owner because the property itself is needed for town purposes, which is to provide for drainage of lands to the north, to the south.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other comments or questions with regard to the report? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That motion passes. That brings us to report CS 17-2015. Can I get a mover? Councillor McDermott? Are there any questions or comments? Your Worship?
Yes, I just had a few questions and I'll start on page 5, the reference to the asset management plan. And the comment that we would, staff is recommending a $600,000 contribution from the supplementary budget. And I know that last year we put in $400,000. Is that $600,000 in addition to the $400,000 last year, which then went into the base budget and continues on and on? Or is this a brand new, fresh $600,000?
Mr. Jansen?
The $600,000 is a base item, so as such, it would add to the annual levy. So it is a compounding effect. It is adding to last year's $400,000.
So the intent is that each year we will be allocating more funds to our ability to manage and maintain our infrastructure. So the $400,000 that was put in last year becomes a perpetual $400. It's part of the budget from year to year. The $600,000 that we're being asked to put in, if we put in this year, then becomes part of the structure. So then that means $1 million more than it was 2 years ago. Next year, if we put in another $600,000, that means that'll be $1.6 million more than that. Is that the gist of it?
Yes, that's correct.
And that's really because of the significant infrastructure replacement and maintenance costs that we've been advised through the asset management plan we are faced over the next 20 years. Sure.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes, that's also correct.
Thank you. I note as well that when we get to the water and sewage treatment costs, those are charges that the region levies to us. So let me make sure that I've got this right, if I might, Madam Chair, through you to Mr. Jansen. Those are charges primarily that are levied to us, and then we have to spread among our taxpayers. Is that correct?
Mr. Jansen?
I wouldn't call it taxpayers. In this case, it is to our ratepayers.
Our customers.
Yes, but yeah, that is correct otherwise, yes.
We have 13 or 14,000 customers. The region has 11, I guess. I classify it. So if we look at Appendix 2, which is around page 10 of this report, the third set of numbers, which relates to the regional treatment costs, those some pretty significant numbers and some significant impacts on our budget. And then if we go immediately below that, it talks about, I presume, how we're going to be paying those costs. Am I still on board? Chair.
Sir Jansen?
To the chair, to Mayor. Yes, that is correct. The additional, in particular, the additional $1.1 million that was previously forecasted is the difference of going from a previous credit position with the region on our wastewater charge to a charge position. So we went at a swing from $353,000 to a credit to a charge of $750,000. So that is that 1.1. And you see that exact same amount supplemental below it as funding that was forecasted from our rate stabilization reserves.
Right. And my question is it prudent for us to be utilizing that much of the rate stabilization reserve in order to cover those costs?
Jansen?
Through you, Chair. The report does speak to the risks of that. Those amounts had been forecasted, and the rate stabilization reserve still has the capacity in the short term to provide that funding, but the risk is in the longer term that particularly with the compounded with the annual operating deficits that we have experienced in recent years, that reserve balance quickly does draw down. So part of what's being recommended here as well is something of a reduced reliance on that rate stabilization, which is going to have an effect overall on the rates.
Which got me thinking about our customers and the fact that our customers don't receive all of the treated water that we buy from the region, nor are they responsible for all of the flows that go through our wastewater treatment plants. Then it got me thinking about how we're going to reduce that. And I know that there's been an ongoing effort for probably 20 years to reduce the extraneous flows into our system and the lost water that gets out of our system. And again, are we looking at every possible opportunity for funding of joint programs with the region or possible provincial funding that might be available to assist us to reduce the amount of water that we lose so that we would thereby reduce our costs that or charges that we have to pay the region for treated water and to reduce the amount of water that infiltrates our sewage system so that, again, we would be paying less money to the region for treatment. Are we covering every opportunity that's available?
Mr. Walsh, did you want to answer that one?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are, Mr. Mayor, through you, Madam Chair, we are, Mr. Mayor, just this afternoon we received an email from Mr. Smelter at the region regarding additional funding available to the CSO program. One of the biggest impacts on our water wastewater budget is the monies we pay for extraneous flow in the wastewater system. So if we can tighten up our sewers, obviously we can reduce that amount paid and become more effective. The region has, I think it was $1.6 million extra, I'll put finger quotes on that, right now that they want to give away. So I've asked if our sewer program, our clay sewer replacement program, would qualify for that, because that's the biggest cause of extraneous flow on the wastewater side. On the water side, there's very limited opportunities for partnerships and additional funding, but I would say that our water meter replacement program goes towards tracking and getting a better handle and more accurate billing on our unaccounted for water.
At the region, I know that there have been combined sewer, what's the O stand for?
Overflow.
Grants or programs where other municipalities have capitalized, and we've actually received some money from that as well in the past. I think we need to be a lot more aggressive in the types of programs that we try to get involved in and try to get money from, because the money is sitting there, and we have a major, major problem with respect to that. I hope that we'll get numbers with respect to much extraneous flows we're actually treating. I mean, it's probably still around 30%, plus or minus. That's a lot of money that we're spending to treat storm. And the other thing is, I think we should be looking at possible programs that might assist with respect to water, because we are still losing water. I don't know what the number is there, and there may be more limited opportunities, but there may be other municipalities that are doing other things that might be a little different than what we're doing here. So I would encourage staff to look into that. Large scale potential savings if we can reduce the lost water and the extraneous flows. One final comment. I believe, Mr. Jansen, you wanted an amendment to the timetable so that scheduled December 2nd meeting will actually be December the 9th.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes, that was discussed at Corporate Services as a recommendation.
I don't know if we need a formal amendment, but it is a schedule, and I suppose I'll move that we change the December 2nd date for the Council and Budget Committee number 2 meeting to December the 9th.
Madam Clerk, do we need a formal amendment?
The Mayor has put one on the floor, and that's acceptable.
Are there any questions or comments? Councillor Knott, could you speak into the microphone?
My question through you to Madam Chair was I was asking the Mayor if it was possible to move the January 16th meeting to December 16th, which would be the library and EDTC budgets, so that we could have the 2 weeks for Christmas to read through the budgets. I remember last year January 13th to December 16th.
Mr. Jansen, how would you prefer that we discuss this as far as the dates go?
Through the chair, typically on the operating side, we do prefer to give as much time for operating budgets as possible. That's why they're presented early in the year, so that all of the preceding fiscal year is mostly complete. That would be the general preference. That's not to say that it couldn't be done earlier, but we do prefer to align it as much as possible with ours. That would be our preference.
Your Worship?
If I'm understanding Councillor Knott, you simply want an opportunity to be able to review the material over the Christmas holiday, as opposed to getting it sometime early in January and having to do it on a shorter time frame. Is that the gist?
Yeah, that's the gist. See, January 13th, then we're in the wastewater on the 18th. January 24th is the general levy. Like, that's a lot of detail in 2 weeks to go through. Quite overwhelming the first year. I'd like more time, not less time, to go through everything.
Right. So I think, Mr. Jansen, to the extent that it's possible, if we can get material beforehand, I understand that you're working with the year end and what have you, but the more material we can get in advance, it is a lot of material. The more well in advance, the better for all of us. I don't know what you can get to us before Christmas, but I know that we all really enjoy reading budget material at Christmas and watching A Christmas Carol. It used to be.
Thank you, Councillor Knott, for that. I will call the question to the motion as amended.
Amendment to change it from the 2nd to the 9th.
All those in favor? That carries. Are there any questions or comments for the motion as amended? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just to go back to the request for the asset management, the $600,000. Over the past years, with the previous council, this was introduced, and each year the amounts have been requested by staff, more so from our finance department. We, and I was part of that, took some criticism for not bringing all the money forward, and we reduced it each year. This year, during our strategic plan process, we identified the fact that what we would like to do is be more committed to our asset management plan. And I'm wondering if through this budget we can set some kind of goal that we would, instead of asking supplementary each year, that we would commit ourselves to an amount that would carry us through the next 4 years of our term. I'm wondering if that's possible.
Mr. Jansen?
Through the chair to Councilor Lubberts, while we definitely appreciate the commitment over the longer term, we generally only commit ourselves in improving the current year budget. So in the past, what we did with the past strategic amount is council, through adoption of a report, committed to a strategy of an annual amount, but that amount was not approved until each annual budget. And I would just also comment as well that the current amount that's in there, the $600,000, is based on the previous strategy, and it's been adjusted from adjustments. In this case, it's $500,000 plus the $100,000 that was foregone last year. In reality, there's actually more dollars that were foregone in past years, but we limited to that right now. But the asset management plan that's coming forward in the next month or two certainly should give us a clear strategy that council can consider and adopt in terms of a longer-term financing of that infrastructure gap.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Jansen. If I may, Madam Chair, maybe Mr. Jansen could give us some advice on how we move forward, because I think our goal here is to make a commitment to the asset management plan. And how do we make the commitment if we can only go year by year? Can we make a one lump sum commitment over the next 4 years, each year coming out of the budgets? Can we do something like that just so that we show the commitment? For me, what I'm looking for is to be able to strike that off one of our goals through the strategic plan.
Mr. Jansen?
Through the chair to Councilor Lubberts, yeah, we can look at our options in that regard. I know we do commit ourselves to funding over longer terms in other areas, but when it's an internal matter like this, we generally only make that commitment through the annual budget process. But we will consider that, in particular as the asset management plan is brought forward, we will consider what options we can present for that.
Okay, I think that's basically what I was asking for from the beginning. Thank you very much.
Anything further? I'll call the question to the motion as amended. All those in favor? That motion passes. That brings us to report CS18-2015. Can I get a mover? Councillor McDermott? Are there any questions or comments with this report? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Before we get started with this, I just need to know from the clerk, maybe get some clarification on how we're going to deal with this report. If we go through the minutes of the Land Committee, through the minutes there were some other recommendations that were made. And we're only seeing the recommendation that was carried by the by the planning committee. But I see after that was carried, I see under new business, and new business continued, that there were two other options. It was a recommendation number two. Was it recommendation number two? Was it recommendation number three? And I'm just wondering, are we going to be discussing the other recommendations that were made by the
Councillor Lubberts, let me just wade in here. So the report has, aside from the recommendation, three alternatives. If councillors don't like the recommendation, they can defeat it. They can put one of the alternatives on the floor. So that's the way we would proceed. If a councillor likes the recommendation, councillor supports the recommendation. If a majority adopts the recommendations that are at the head of the report, that's what we do. If that's defeated, an alternative can be put on the floor, and we'll see where we go from there. But this recommendation, number one, and I would say two, should be defeated, and if councillors don't agree with it, so that another alternative can be put on the floor.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redicott, for the explanation. So I understand what you're saying, but the report that we have is only the one recommendation. And I'm just, what I would like to do is make the amendment that we bring the other recommendations into this report, because the other recommendations are in the minutes of the land committee.
No, this report contains three alternate recommendations. They start on page 6 of the report, and they go through to page 8 of the report. None of them are compatible with the existing recommendation that is at the top of the report that is recommended by staff. So you can't really amend that. You'd have to defeat that and then put an alternative on the floor if you wish to.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Lubert, anything further? Okay. Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Chair Zanko. Through you to, I believe, Mr. Brady would probably be best suited to answer this question. I'm just wondering if you could explain what a reference plan is and why it costs $2,200.
Mr. Brady?
Thank you. I'll attempt to answer that question. A reference plan is basically a plan that's prepared by a surveyor, and it's then deposited at the land registry office. Thank you. And the costs associated with it are simply the costs associated with the preparation of the plan and depositing it. And they're not costs that the town has. So those are costs.
Does the landowner have to go with a surveyor then that is recommended by the town, or can she seek out her own surveyor, or does the town take this on and then charge that fee, but the fee goes to that surveyor?
I just wanted to point out that Mrs. Schofield is here as well, and she did prepare this report, so perhaps she might like to answer.
Ron? Through you to the councillor. Yes, the cost of the reference plan, generally what we do is we order the reference plan and we charge the cost back. We get an estimate first, and we let the applicant know how much that cost is. $2,200 was the last one that we had, so that seemed to be a good field to go to. Insofar as we have had occasions where the property owner has wished to use their own surveyor, and by all means they're able to do that, we do require that we see a draft of the plan before it's deposited so that we can ensure that it's accurate, it does what we want it to do. All the legal technical aspects of it are addressed on the plan. But yes, certainly they can do that.
And Ms. Schofield, I just have a couple of more questions, actually. So once this reference plan is completed, does that landowner then take over that property, that piece of property that is encroached upon? So if it's, for example, I don't know how many feet this one is, but if it's 2 or 3 feet, 2.8. If it's 2.8, does that then become part and parcel of her land then at that point, or does the town still own it?
The town remains the ownership of it. They're given the permission to use it. This is a very unique situation. Usually encroachments are structures so that there's no gap, if you will. This is a fence that encloses the part of the road allowance, which basically gives exclusive use to that property owner. But the ownership is maintained through the town. We're simply giving them permission to maintain it at their expense. And should in the future the town require that portion of the road allowance, they will be asked to remove it.
I guess my question is that if that particular piece of property was had already had an established fence, and the town requires now that just because that person had replaced some boards, maybe a couple of posts, and the property still remains ownership within the town, why doesn't the town absorb that cost?
Why isn't the town absorb the cost
of the
replacing
reference plan.
The fence? Oh, the reference plan.
Of the reference plan.
The town didn't have, through you, the town didn't have any part in placing that fence there. The property owner is coming to the town asking for permission. Policy provides that all of the expenses will be at the expense of the applicant or the property owner.
But if the fence was there prior to, I'm just trying to understand, so bear with me. If the fence was there prior to, and there was not an issue at that time, why is there an issue at this time? I think that's where I'm trying to understand why all of a sudden there becomes this big issue. And I mean, the fees are more than the taxes on an annual basis. So for me, it doesn't make sense.
Through you to the counselor. This was driven by a complaint. It's not something that we would have gone out and looked for. I'm not sure what else I might be able to tell you.
And maybe I'm not being totally clear myself, but I from what I understand, this fence prior to a few boards being replaced had existed for a long period of time. And so in my opinion, I get that people shouldn't be encroaching, and if you knowingly do so, I get why we do what we do. But if it's already been in existence for many years, why all of a sudden now do we need to face a financial consequence?
If I could direct counsel to the policy itself, it does recognize that there are in the residential, general residential area, that existing encroachments may be permitted. Replacement of existing encroachments may be permitted. It's the new encroachments that are prohibited, but that is solely in the discretion of council. The policy requires that the applicant's request be referred to the land committee. Land committee makes the recommendation based on what all of the criteria, guidelines that they look at, and the policy itself. And in the end, it's up to the council to decide whether or not they wish to. So land committee has made this recommendation.
Thank you. And if I may, just one further question. Sorry. So then if this was an existing encroachment and it is not a new encroachment, then council has the right to grandfather it in and allow it to exist without any further consequences or financial ramifications?
That's totally up to council again. They would need to weigh the policy. The policy would require that you go through the entire process, pay the administration fee, enter into an encroachment agreement, pay for the reference plan, title search, and registration costs. Council also always has the ability to waive any part or all of the policy.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions for Mrs. Schofield? Councilor Weller? Or Councilor Lieberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I don't know specifically if there are questions for Ms. Schofield, but I'd just like to comment on the report itself. Reading through the report, for all the recommendations that were there, staff looked at things, gave us the ups and downs of all of the options that are available. It does show that what's existing right now, there's a trip and fall risk that's there with some of the boards, the way they're placed. As far as the fact that the fence itself is something that has been there in the future, in the past, and it's been there for many years, and now Councillor Butler is saying that why now all of a sudden, you know, there's a problem. But I don't know that it's why now. Back in 2010, I was canvassing and running for council. It was my first term of council. And the neighbor across the street, when I was canvassing and talking to him at the door, he explained to me and wanted to know why this fence was encroaching on town property and why they were allowing it to happen. And from what conversation I had with him, he did report it to staff. I don't know if our bylaw still has that on record or not, but he certainly knew about it, and he relayed that to myself. So I knew that that fence was encroaching on the road allowance. It's no different than anybody else. We have to be aware of what we're doing with our property. Everybody needs to know that, you know, when you start working and you, I have a piece of property myself, I have a fence on that property. I need to know, is it in the right place? It needs to be repaired. It needs to be replaced, one or the other. I think it's the duty of the property owner to make sure that whenever they're doing anything on their property lines, that they must make sure that they're there. If you go down Brewster Avenue and take a look, it is a narrow street to begin with. I look at the neighbors across the street. If you were to pull into the driveway in a normal facing with the front end of your car facing to the house, it is, when you're backing out of that driveway, the fence is definitely a concern, in my opinion. So I look at that, and I mean, I don't know that I can support the report itself, the first recommendation to allow the encroachment, knowing full well that you know, this is the responsibility of the property owner. I understand the $3,000 is a lot of money, but the $3,000 is something that we've set in place, and those are the things that you need to do as a homeowner to avoid if your encroachment is going to be more than your taxes, then maybe you move the fence. And lastly, we need to go and take a look at what we've been doing over the last few years with the roads and the road allowance encroachments, specifically what we've done in Waverly Beach. And we've told those people that you're encroaching. There was two of them that had actual walls, concrete or stone walls on the road allowance, and we requested that they be removed. And the other encroachment agreement that we came up with was there's an actual house on the road allowance, so we allowed for an encroachment agreement to be there. This council, not this council, but previous councils and previous to when I was a councillor, they discussed road allowance encroachments. And there was soft encroachments, hard encroachments. They went through a long, drawn-out process of getting something on paper so that this is the way we're going to deal with them. This is the way we have to deal with them. And if it's excessive amount of money, that's the policy that we have. And I believe that's the way it should be. But in my view, looking at the circumstances, it would be better just to move the fence. Then there's no encroachment. There's no excessive cost to the property owner. And everybody has a better understanding of where the property ends and where it starts.
Are there any other comments or questions? Councillor Passero?
Just a couple comments for the benefit of my colleagues this term as it relates to the waterfront road allowance strategy. There's only one person I think that has more knowledge of it than me, and that's Gary Skerritz. The purpose that we went road to road was it was a council directive that we identified that as a special area of significance. And it was council's direction that we look specifically at each one of those road allowances, particularly with the view of encroachments. And the policy was based around that. To my knowledge, we've never had a council direction that says we're going to look at every street in the town of Fort Erie systematically and look at places where we have fences encroaching. That was specific to the waterfront road allowances. So I don't really think it's an apples to apples comparison to say that while we did it with waterfront road allowances, we should be doing it in residential areas. It was a very specific purpose. It recognized where those road allowances were going towards. They were lake access. This is a much different scenario. So I just offer that as context for the rest of the discussion.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. Are there any other comments or questions, Your Worship?
Councillor Passero, I'm somewhat disappointed. I thought you might lead us into the direction that you're heading on this. But as you said earlier today, you're on the fence. I want to start by... Well, obviously we were more attentive. I want to say that, first off, Madam Chair, that I thought this was a very good report. This is an excellent report. It covers everything, gives us the background of the policy, gives us some historical context, points out that we've got many, many undoubted encroachments on road allowances throughout the municipality, and gives us alternatives. I mean, there are three clear alternatives here. It also explains the rationale for the policy and what it is that the staff is concerned about when they make this recommendation through the land committee. And from my perspective, this recommendation could be anticipated to come from staff because they're looking at a number of things. They're looking at the fact that the town is responsible for its own property. It's responsible for liability issues that arise with respect to its property. And it's responsible for ensuring that there's some consistent implementation of policy, and the policy is clear. It does talk about, and I have a couple of questions, it does talk about extraordinary, if we're going to deviate, if we're going to permit an encroachment. And so it seems to me, if I might, Madam Chair, just ask, when we look at paragraph 4.3 of the policy, I believe the extraordinary circumstances, if I've interpreted this correctly, gives the latitude to the municipality to consider granting an encroachment agreement as opposed to simply requiring the removal of the encroachment. Is that correct?
Goldfield?
Your Madam Chair, to your worship, that's correct.
Right. So that the initial direction of staff through the policy is this encroachment must be removed. The resident then would say, well, hold it, I've got some circumstances here that I think are extraordinary that council should consider. And those are set forth from the property owner's perspective in the presentation that she made to us a couple of weeks ago or a month ago, and in the letter that's attached to this report. And then the report goes on to look at some of the various aspects of this. I think there's some parts of the position of the property owner that aren't particularly extraordinary, but I think there are some that would fall into that category, at least if I were interpreting it. And I think we need to bear in mind that we could end up with a number of these coming before us at some point. We won't, maybe we will. The reality is this is the first time, and therefore when we make the decision, we set a precedent. So coming from that, from a perspective of a lawyer, I look at, first and foremost, liability. Does the municipality incur any potential liability with respect to granting this? And if it does, how does the municipality protect itself? The obvious way that the municipality protects itself in this scenario is for there to be a written agreement which includes an indemnity that says the property owner will indemnify the municipality if something happens on the property that causes injury or damage to someone else or someone else's property. So from a lawyer's perspective, I look at that. Well, I'm interested in making sure that we protect ourselves. The other point that's raised in the report, and I suppose it's something that would be of interest, and it may not be with respect to this particular property, but any property where there's a similar situation that arises, is what about the next property owner? What about the person that acquires this property, and there's an encroachment? Maybe the owner will say, by the way, I'm encroaching on the municipality's property by whatever, or they might not say anything. There's nothing that requires an owner to, well, maybe there's a bit more of an obligation for them to reveal that, but a property owner may not say anything. And nowadays, there's property insurance mostly. People don't send out surveyors to do a survey like they used to in the old days, and a survey would clearly identify that there's an encroachment. And then there would be a request by the purchaser to have that encroachment removed or perhaps the purchase price reduced or what have you. So there are legal implications with respect to that that might encourage a property owner. I'm not talking about this property owner who's a minister. I'm not going to suggest that she would try to hide anything. But another situation that could occur. I don't think that we should be participating in that type of situation. Wouldn't be if we had an encroachment agreement with an indemnity to protect us from liability, and we registered not the agreement, but the notice that's referred to in Alternative 3. So that does a number of things. That protects the municipality. It ensures that a future prospective owner at least has the opportunity to be notified that there is something that the municipality is concerned about. And number three, it's a lot less than the cost if we did a full-blown encroachment agreement with a reference plan and required that to be registered on title. I believe the report says that's about $824. Still a sizable sum of money, but it is an encroachment on municipal property, and there are reasons why we would want an agreement. I go back to the letter from the property owner suggesting the possibility of an encroachment agreement. I think at the time, the property owner didn't know that an encroachment agreement could be so expensive. But I'm just to cut this to the chase, I'm going to not support this recommendation that's before us, but I would favor recommendation number three, which I think accomplishes. Sorry? Okay. The one number. No, number three, that the property owner's request to permit the replacement of an existing fence on the Brewster Road allowance and the entry into an encroachment agreement. Oh, I see. That's three. That's denied. So I would number two.
If maybe I could just clarify with the clerk, should we not decide on the...
Yeah, we have. So it would be number one, alternative number one that I would support. So I'm not going to support this recommendation, and if this is defeated, I'd be looking at number one. Thank you, Councillor Nutt.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions or comments? Councillor Liberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm just curious as to, when we're looking at the road allowance encroachments, and I know what Councillor Passero, where he was going with, you know, the request on the road allowances and the waterfront road allowances, and I'm a little uncomfortable with the fact to say that we have a road allowance policy and we only want to target certain people. that have the road allowance encroachments, and those are the people along the waterfront. And I don't think that our policy targets just one. That may have been what triggered it. But now that it's there, a road allowance in the town of Fort Erie is a road allowance, and if there's an encroachment, we need to protect the town. We just discussed a report earlier when a gentleman wants to purchase 7 meters of a road allowance. I suggested that we sell the other part of the road allowance, excluding the drainage, to the other property owner, and I think we all agreed that that wasn't a good idea to sell that because we need that. The town needs that for themselves. We needed that piece of property for the drainage. We have this piece of property that we need. It's a narrow road to begin with. If there's a possibility that somebody needs to get around somebody on that road, we're going to limit ourselves to what we can do with that property. I don't see that we can move forward with an agreement that's not going to be registered. Again, Mayor Redekop, he says the property owner now, by all, from what we believe and what we know, we would think that the property owner today would tell the people that, oh, by the way, I have an encroachment and you need to know that. That's fine for that sale, but what about the next sale? That might not happen. Now we have a problem. And I don't know that I would be comfortable going into any agreement unless it's registered on title. And so that brings us back to the agreements that have to be made, which makes the cost go higher. And if it's not registered, I'm not comfortable with it, and I won't support it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just wanted to say it was a well-written report, so thank you. But I also wanted to say that it's nice to have a lawyer sitting next to me so that I can get some information that's free advice. I agree with the mayor, and actually I would support alternative number one as well.
Are there any other comments or questions? So from my understanding, we're going to call the question to this report, and then one of my colleagues is going to make a motion with the alternative. Is it? If it's not passed, yeah. Okay. I'll call the question. All those in favor? Opposed? Okay. That does not carry. Would anybody like to move a recommendation or your worship?
Madam Chair, I would like to move alternative number one, but I would like to add to that the paragraph that if the encroachment agreement is not entered into, within 60 days, the fence and shed shall be required to be removed within 30 days thereafter. In fact, let's make that 90 days. That if the encroachment agreement isn't entered into within 90 days, and that would allow adequate opportunity for the town and the property owner to get this organized. And then if it doesn't work out, then there'd be a further 30 days, so a total of 120 days if necessary. But and if I may just speak to this, as I said before, this provides adequate protection to the municipality in terms of the agreement, which would have the indemnity for liability and the ability of the municipality to register a notice on title, so that would also address Councillor Lubert's concerns. And it would provide, I wouldn't say an inexpensive solution to the property owner, but something that's more manageable than $3,200. And I think that this sets a reasonable tone where a municipality that's trying to be cooperative with our residents and lots of people that have themselves in this position. That's why I put it forward, and that's why I'm going to support it.
Okay. Madam Clerk, do you have that recommendation? Okay. Are there any questions or comments? Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Let's just—I'm just looking at the alternative one and the two that's that are in there. And the mayor has indicated that this will protect the municipality because this will give notice on title, and it'll cover the indemnity. How do we get this in here that the notice on title will be there? We're suggesting that that's what has to happen, but we need some clarification on how does that happen through this here, these two VATs. Do they need to be included into VATs? So this needs to be amended to include those.
Mrs. Schofield?
I, through you to Councillor Lubert, I believe it's inherent that we would, without being able to register the actual encroachment agreement due to the lack of a reference plan, that we would do the next best thing, which is the notice, which does get registered on title and is included in the list of costs in the report and is also included in the 82530 in the second recommendation. However, if you would like to add, it would make it perfectly clear that notice of the agreement would be registered on title.
Yes, I think it needs to be added into this here because that makes it quite clear exactly what's happening, and then nobody can come back and say, well, that's not the way it's written. So I'd like to make a friendly amendment to request.
I would agree that that's a friendly amendment, and that should be included, Madam Clerk. Thank you, Councillor Lubitsch.
Yes, and could we just have a reading of the motion now, the new?
Well, the clerk would do that.
Yes. Yeah.
Certainly, through you, Your Worship, this is my understanding. The first paragraph would read, the property owner's request to permit the replacement of an existing fence on the Brewster Road allowance and the entry into an encroachment agreement, including an indemnity clause and registered notice, is approved, including the shed enclosed by the fence and further. The second paragraph would be as is.
Your Worship, is that?
Well, and then there's there's the need to refer to the registration. I don't think you mentioned that, did you?
That's right. I was just dealing with the indemnity that Councillor Lubert's brought up, but it would go on further to say the second paragraph as is, adding an and further, that if the encroachment agreement is not entered into within 90 days, it be removed within 30 days afterward.
So I don't think we have the part about the registration, do we? Did you read that? Okay.
Okay.
Councillor Roberts.
Yes, just to go over that again, you said something about notice of registry. And does that mean notice on registered on title?
That's the intention. That's
okay. Okay, all right, thank you.
Councillor Becerra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify, the notice on title remains even after transference of ownership. Okay.
It will remain on title until the town removes it.
Just wanted to clarify. I remember that from my days on property standards, and we did that specifically. So even if it transfers hands two or three times, it's there for future property
owners.
It will
be for an intermittent amount of time.
Okay. I support the current recommendation 100%. I think it still meets the spirit and intent of the bylaw. I think it recognizes the circumstances that have come into play in this particular event, and I think it's a great balance of us protecting our obligations and what we view as important in allowing the homeowner to continue and enjoy what they always have been. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Councillor Knott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Ms. Schofield. Will that amount that is listed in the report for an estimated cost of $825.30 remain, or with the registration of title, is there going to be added fees to that?
No, that's included. The registration cost is included there.
Are there any other? Councillor Lubert?
Yeah, just to follow up on Councillor Pacero's question about the new owners. What about the indemnity? How does that work with a new owner? Will that have to be brought up to the new owner? Because the indemnity is...
Let me take a run at this. So the document that would be registered on title will simply say that the municipality is giving notice that there's something that the municipality is concerned about with respect to the property. when a person purchases property, they typically will at least search the title. Don't search the title, they won't receive notice. But that'll be their problem. They will inherit the fact that the notice was there. Most prospective purchasers will have their lawyers check the title. Any prudent lawyer will then inquire as to what the nature of the notice is and what it relates to and request a copy of the agreement. If they're getting title insurance for their client, notice that appears on title, they have an obligation to advise the insurance company what the notice is about. Otherwise, the insurance company will say that they're not obliged to bear the risk if it turns out there's a problem in the future. So this won't have the encroachment agreement on title, but it will alert and give notice to a prospective purchaser that there's something that the municipality is concerned about. So that will cause the bells to ring and inquiries to be made.
Councilor Roberts?
If I may, Madam Chair, Mayor Redekop, you're saying that we're registering this on title, but it's not necessarily, it's just that there's something there. The encroachment's not being registered. What's not being registered?
That's right. The encroachment itself isn't being registered because there's no reference plan. So a notice is being put on title that there's something that a prospective purchaser or mortgage company should be aware of, and they'll find out what it is by simply contacting the municipality.
Well, then can you give me some clarification on our first that, because it says the property owner's request to permit the replacement of an existing fence on Brewster Road, road allowance, and the entry into an encroachment agreement. That's
so,
our first that, and that's what we're discussing. If we approve that, then there's going to be an encroachment agreement.
That's right. There will be an encroachment agreement. The encroachment agreement itself will not be registered on title because there's not a reference plan. But the municipality will put a notice on title that they have an interest in the property. That interest then will trigger a prospective purchaser to inquire of the town, what is the interest? And the answer will be an encroachment agreement.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Councillor Becerra?
Just to follow up on where I thought Councillor Lubberts was going, the encroachment agreement is between ourselves and the property owner. Is a portion of that notice to a prospective buyer or to the new owner of the property that they must also enter into an encroachment agreement? Because I don't believe the encroachment agreement itself transcends the ownership if it's between us and the proponent. How does that work?
Through the chair to Councillor Becerra, that's a very good question. This is a unique situation. Normally, we do have the reference plans. We do have the encroachment agreements. Once they are registered, they do run with the land, which means that they do continue to bind any subsequent purchasers. Situation that we're talking about, the notice only would be registered. So without the registration of the agreement, all of those covenants, if you will, that are within that agreement don't continue with the next property owner, but they are made aware of the encroachment agreement that exists. I would suggest that in this particular situation, when they come to us and say, what do you have, that's our trigger that we need to deal with this encroachment once again, have the new purchaser enter into the encroachment, otherwise we're going to be looking at the fence being removed. If they're not prepared to give us an indemnity and the proper insurance, then that's what we would be looking at.
Okay. So when this home does go up for sale, in addition to prospective buyers at the open house, we'll have 12 or 13 staff also visiting?
If I'm invited.
Thank you for that clarification.
Are there any other comments or questions? Councillor Lubert?
Yeah, this is getting to be more complicated than I thought. If that's the case, then we're sitting in a position where we have to constantly monitor this property to see if it ever goes up for sale. And I don't know that the municipality should be subjected to anything like that. We need something here. A month ago, was my concern, was the protection of the municipality. If the property is sold and it goes into new ownership and there's no encroachment agreement with the new owner, we're right back in the same position we are today. And if that person decides to replace or repair the fence, then the future council is in the same position that we are in today. And we're putting that future council in that position. And I think it's our responsibility to make sure that we don't put future councils in a position where they're uncomfortable. And so we need a little bit more than just that there's an interest in the town. And, but if it doesn't get included in the purchase and sale, then, you know, we'll just have to track it down at a later date. I'm not comfortable with that either.
Mayor Redicott?
Well, for 15 or 16 years, as I understand it, this encroachment has existed and we weren't aware of it. And so if 10 years from now or 15 years or whenever the current owner sells it and the new owner doesn't somehow twig into it or alert us, we're in the same position we were up until 2 months ago. Not to mention that there's probably, I don't know if it'd be hundreds, but there are many, many encroachments in the municipality of which we are not aware. And so we just happen to be aware of this one because a complaint was made, and now we're being asked to do something because we have a policy that deals with it. And so we're looking at the least intrusive way to do that, the least expensive way for the property owner, but the best way to protect us. And that's what we're doing. It'll be an encroachment agreement, and I don't see a downside to this whatsoever. We could go the full encroachment agreement route, registration of the encroachment agreement. I don't think that that's necessary, and I don't support it. And I think it's over burdensome for the property owner in this particular situation or similar situations. If you don't agree with it, then vote against.
Well, thank you very much, Mayor Redicott. And just going on to your point where this encroachment has been there for 15 or 16 years or forever, however long that fence has been there. And I understand what you're saying, and you're absolutely correct. We didn't know about it. It wasn't brought to our attention. But now that it has been brought to our attention, we don't ignore it. We deal with it. And that's what my point is. There's lots of other encroachments. There's lots of other things that go on in this town that we're not aware of. When we become aware of them, then we need to deal with them. We need to deal with them properly. We need to make sure that we're protecting all our bases. And so that's where I'm coming from. And, you know, not having something go to the next owner and having something there so that we don't have to monitor, so that if there's a sale of that property, it's quite clear that there's a problem there and that it needs to be dealt with. And the new owner would have to enter into that same agreement with the municipality. Otherwise, we're just putting a Band-Aid on it, and that Band-Aid is going to fall off one day.
Councilor McDermott?
Well, I don't think we're ignoring it. I think we're actually dealing with it. I mean, the first one we have was a little bit ridiculous as far as I'm concerned, so we have to try and mitigate this in the best way possible. Fact of the matter is, if the proponent here decides to sell her house, the buyer will probably have a choice, A, to continue on with an encroachment agreement, or B, move the fence, get a survey done, and do the due diligence. There's what I see. I don't feel that paying out $3,200 when you don't pay that in taxes for this specific item, I think that's a little bit over the hill. I think we got to mitigate our things for our constituents. If we're not working on behalf of our constituents here, then I guess we do this. But I think all of us are working for a constituent, and I think we're solving a problem, not starting one.
Councilor Becerra?
Yeah, just very briefly, we don't monitor things now. So to the mayor's point, we would just be back to where we were before. The notice on title, as the mayor mentioned, will trigger further investigation by their legal counsel. And as Council McDermott just pointed out, at that point, they can make a decision. Do they want to continue on or take their chances? That's up to them. But we're not going to be in a babysitting position anymore in 10 years than we were 10 years ago. So I'll support this, and I respectfully ask if no other councillors have any questions that we call the question.
Are there any other councillors that have questions? Okay, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Opposed? That carries. And that brings us to new business inquiries.
Yes.
Any? Councilor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Going back to the last motion, you didn't bring it forward as amended?
No, no. We defeated the recommendations that were in the report, and I put forward a whole new motion.
Yes, and then a friendly amendment to...
Well, it's a friendly amendment, so it was just amended and it was read as...
That's
the resolution.
I just need some clarification.
Yeah, that's
Thank
the
you
resolution
very much.
That was passed.
Okay. Are there any members of councillor that have any inquiries or new business that they would like to discuss? Councillor Butler?
I do have an inquiry with respect to business licenses in town. So I guess it would be Mr. Jansen that would need to answer this. If a business in town had purchased a license but moved in another area of our municipality, would they then have to purchase a new license, and why would that be?
Actually, to Mr. Cookett, I know, yeah.
Let's see if there's a consistent answer.
Through you, Chair, to the Councillor. Hopefully this is the same answer we gave the last time. But, yes, if a business relocates, they have to pay the fee once again. That fee goes to administrative costs, being the new location has to be inspected by our forces and so forth. So there are costs incurred. I know the request was, can we waive those, and what was the reason for those costs? And that's the reason, because we do have costs at the new location.
Is there anything further? That brings us to business status report. Do any members of council have any questions or comments with regard to the business status report? Seeing none, that closes corporate services, and I'd like to hand the chair back to you, Mayor Redicott.
Thank you very much, Councillor Zanko. Then we need a motion to add a business item under Community and Development Services. Councillor Nutt, did you move that? Any questions? All those in favor? Carried. So that takes us to Community and Development Services, and that is Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Community and Development Services is now open, so we are dealing with the report CDS 73-2015, award of contract to build replacement pumper number 6. It moved by Mayor Redicott. Are there any comments or questions? Mayor Redicott.
The only question I have is for a clarification with respect to the amount of money, and because there was discussion in the report about the American exchange rate, and then the second part of that is, where will the shortfall come from?
The shortfall, approximately, I think it's $11,000, would come out of the equipment capital budget reserve.
So the first part had to do with the American exchange.
Correct.
So this amount that is in our report is presumably Canadian dollars.
That is correct.
And this could alter if the exchange rate continues to fluctuate?
No, that is the contract is with a Canadian company in Canadian dollars.
I see.
So it's fixed. We have in the past dealt with American companies paid in American, and we've won and we've lost doing it that way.
Thank you. Done.
Councillor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much. I guess my question will go to the fire chief. Chief, what do we do with the other pumper truck?
Chief Copeland.
Through the chair to Councilor Lubberts. This particular vehicle that is being replaced isn't a particularly good vehicle. It's not something we would keep and put into reserves. So in the past, what we have done is use the bid and go and other processes to sell them. Pumpers generally don't get a lot of interest. Having said that, I wouldn't even hazard a guess of how much we would get for it, but it's not significant. But we would sell it at auction or using some other methods we have.
Yes, thank you very much. That's exactly where I was going, Councillor Nutt. In the just previously, Port Colborne's had some shortfalls with their fire station and some fires. Is it possible that we could contact them and maybe would they be willing to take over this pumper and maybe even help us with the shortfall? I can't remember what the shortfall was. $11,000. Could something like that work out? Could we look into that?
Through the chair to Council Liberty, yes, I could do that. Keeping in mind that this truck, by the time it's delivered, will be at least a year down the road, or approximately a year down the road. But we have done things like that in the past. We have sold it to companies, and some municipalities will donate the truck to a country that could use it without the standards that we have here. There are a lot of options.
Yes, I guess my question is, could we just go to Port Colborne and ask them if there's if they have any use, give them the first option?
Certainly we could.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. Community and Development Services is now... Oh, yeah, okay. We're moving on to inquiries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know it's not listed on here, but I do have an inquiry for Madam Clerk not allowing it.
The motion was to allow an urgent matter within Community Development Services, which we've just done.
I'll send you an email, Rick. Thank you.
So now Community and Development Services is now closed, and you can have the floor.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. The clerk is tough. There are scheduling of meetings. Do you have a meeting that you're going to advise me of, Councillor Lubberts?
No, I'd just like to make a comment regarding Councillor Nutt's request. I do believe that he could ask to remove the rules of procedure so he could move forward with this. Is that possible, Madam Clerk?
We could do that. We could waive the rules.
At this time, now that we've recessed
from corporate meetings. Now we're into scheduling of meetings.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Councillor Roberts. Are there any meetings that anyone needs, Councillor Passero?
Just a quick tack on to your mention of the Taste of Fort Erie, Your Worship, this Saturday. A great community corporate partner in town, Timbermart, is selling We Love Fort Erie shirts as a fundraiser for our Greater Fort Erie Secondary School, and they will be available at the fundraiser at Venus Jewelers. I bring that up under schedule of meetings because Taste of Fort Erie, I'll be at the beer tent meeting there for 7 p.m. if anybody would like to join me. Thank you.
Are you serving the public, or are you just there for your own enjoyment?
It'll be a little bit of both, depending on what shift they have me at.
Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just on Thursday, the 24th, there's a Business After 5 event at the Buffalo Yacht Club for the Chamber of Commerce.
Taken on that?
September 24th.
Any other meetings? Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. There's an Environmental Advisory Committee meeting Wednesday, September 23rd at 5 p.m. here at the Town Hall.
Thank you. Any other meetings? If not, Councillor Nutt, would you like to move that we adjourn?
Yes, Your Worship. I move that the Council of Fort Erie adjourns at 8.05 p.m. to resume regular council on September 28th at 6 p.m.
All those in favor? That is carried. Look at that.